Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tuesday. What's up? Welcome in Grant and Danny on the Fan, October 7th, 2025. You are listening live. We'll take you up to 6:30 today, live and local on the Fan. We got a lot on the show. Caps open tomorrow. You'll hear from Anthony Bevilier, who had a great postseason for them in our Beltway Blitz today at 4 o'clock. By the way, at 4 ahead of the Blitz. As soon as we return in that segment, Danny, we've got those My Chemical Romance tickets.
Ah, yes, indeed.
Those will be good. It's Tuesday, which means Tuesdays with Bill, Ja'Cory, Krosky, Merritt, fresh off 100-plus yards, 150 all-purpose. The star of the weekend for the Commanders is on our show live at 5 o'clock today, and we'll talk to one of the longest-tenured members of any sports team in town. John Carlson is with us today in our final 6 o'clock segment, looking ahead to tomorrow's Caps season opener. Should be a fun little show.
It will be a fun show. And speaking of old Bill, it's a Survivor Tuesday, as you know, which we're going to do here in a moment. Something tells me that even next week, let's say Bill has the worst game in human history and everybody's very mad at him, probably won't be voted off the island. Great chance that young man's immune coming into next weekend.
Things are trending well for Bill.
Yeah, you'd think so. Great chance.
5 p.m. we'll ask him who he gives immunity to and who he's voting off the island. Without further ado, let's get to it. On a Tuesday, it's a Survivor Day on Grant and Danny. You go to Facebook, our page, facebook.com/Grant and Danny, and you vote right now. Send somebody home who had a bad game and give somebody immunity. Or you could just kind of put Bill's name in there and keep it moving.
You can write down someone else's name, but you'd be wrong.
Could be the trend of the day. He ran for a buck 11. He went for 39 as a receiver. He touched the ball 16 times, went for 150. We will talk to him at 5 o'clock today. Maybe we should take some calls with Bill. Let people serenade him with their kind words on the phones. Our listening audience can chat with Bill today on Grant and Danny. We'll do that as well in that 5 o'clock segment. Monday Night Football last night was great, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
I did not see this one coming. This was a Jacksonville Jaguars stunning home win over the Kansas City Chiefs, 31-28. They were down 14-0. Looked like they were laying an egg in a big national TV spot. They got up off the mat, and give them this credit. A la Washington in LA against the Chargers, they got punched in the mouth. They tasted a little bit of blood. They spit it out, and they started swinging. And they came right back at the Chiefs. Jacksonville is 4-1 under first-year head coach Liam Cohen. This is the former OC of the Bucs who helped get Baker Mayfield to the elite level he's playing at, who then interviewed with the Jaguars and wasn't going to take the job and told Tampa Bay he was coming back, but then stayed in Jacksonville, and they found out when we found out he was getting hired. You remember how precarious and weird that whole thing was?
The whole thing was bizarre.
Not a good look for him. But what is a good look, his players really like him, and they have won 4 of their 5 games. They've got a defense that turns teams over. The first 4 games before yesterday, they had 3 or more takeaways in every single contest. Yesterday, a 99-yard pick 6 by Devin Lloyd. At the 1-yard line, he returned all the way to the end zone. And I still don't know. That was the longest interception return ever. I'm pretty sure he stopped at like the 20, signed an autograph for someone, then stopped again at midfield, and he like picked a couple clovers like a kid at a Little League game. Where were the Chiefs? How did no one tackle that guy on that return?
Bizarre. Yeah, I mean, in terms of like the longest distance traveled, it wasn't, but it's still... In terms of the amount of time it took, I remember...
That was like a 9-second return.
Remember Rock Cartwright had a kick return for a touchdown like 30 years ago? You're just like, I can't believe he's still going. This is taking a long time because his top end speed isn't the same as the other guys. But yeah, that was not a great play for Kansas City there, obviously. That was a transformative moment. What a win for Jacksonville, where, you know, it's, oh, you're 3-1. That's adorable. It's a new day in town. Oh, I'm sure. Now, listen, it's not your older brother's Kansas City Chiefs, but that win still means a lot to that group, right? It just kind of solidified that this is not some sort of weird pretender situation, early season fluke where your defense shoved it on Houston, for example. Okay, you got him at the right time. A 4-1 team, even without Lawrence still playing at a high level or throwing the ball at a high level, kind of gritty, finding a way to win against a pretty bona fide opponent. That's a big deal.
Trevor Lawrence was exceptional down the stretch last night. I didn't think he was particularly great in the rest of the game. He certainly wasn't good early. But in the last drive, he made a all-pro throw, a top-of-the-line, number one overall pick caliber throw to Brian Thomas Jr. on the game-winning drive. And sometimes you got to be lucky, more so than good. On the final play of offense for Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence fell down behind the line of scrimmage, got tripped up by the center. They're at the goal line trying to cap their comeback.
Now, this isn't the fake fall down quarterback play that is taking the league by storm.
Get ready to see this one.
Maybe, yeah, it's not
maybe
that
Ben
one.
Johnson's going to put this one in the playbook. But Trevor Lawrence, from 1 yard out after falling down, gets up, scores a touchdown. You want to talk about a bad film day? The superstar of the Chiefs, Chris Jones, big 95, just completely takes the play off, pulls a full Albert Haynesworth. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
He's standing at the goal line flat footed and basically doesn't move. Like, Trevor Lawrence falls down, still not moving. Trevor Lawrence tries to get up, falls down again, still not moving. Then he runs to his left. Chris Jones is like, hopefully someone tackles him.
Someone should do something.
And this is one of the highest paid players in the league, one of the best defensive players there are. He was just so uninterested in this play where the Jags take the lead with 23 seconds to go and win it.
First and goal with 30 seconds left. Now Lawrence goes down, has to get up. Breaks a tackle. Touchdown, Jacksonville.
That was a really good call.
That was my reaction, too, by the way.
Troy
I said
Aikman's
no way.
Troy voice cracking, just yelling no way. It was one of those plays you don't believe while you're watching it.
The quarterback fell down, sort of rolled.
Twice, I would say, by the way.
Yeah.
Because he fell down and then tried to get up and stumbles. He was like in such a rush, uh-huh. So desperate. We've all been there before. You can't get up fast enough that uh-huh. You actually fall again.
Yeah.
It's kind of two of those. And then still stands up, and you're like, oh, he's going to get hit. And then he breaks a tackle.
He's like a baby deer on ice going down a couple times, and all of a sudden now runs like he's Earl Campbell. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you lose, but what a backbreaker that was. But as soon as Kansas City scored with, you know, just under 2 minutes, I went, that's way too much time. And that's usually what happens the other way, right, where you take the lead against Kansas City, and then you look up at the clock and you go, oh, crap, we left a minute 40 for Mahomes. Well, it went the other way this time, and Jacksonville, to their credit, despite multiple sacks on the possession, or at least, you know, tackles for a loss from behind the line, still finds a way, and it really, again, that moment, that throw down the sideline to Thomas, just sublime. I think it was either ETN or somebody was on a shallow cross, where I think he could have got it to him in space, first down, maybe get out of bounds, stop the clock, but he saw the look that he wanted, one-on-one, safety was going to be late to get over there. And he took a shot, and it was perfect.
It took a perfect throw. I thought the same thing watching the game in real time. I was thinking, you got 10 free yards.
Yeah.
Accept the free yards, please. Nope, I'm going to make the throw of my career right here and right now and try to win the football game. The AFC South is nothing like we thought it was going to be, but it is actually ultra-competitive. Now, the Titans are terrible, 1-4, which I think most people thought they would be. The Colts are 4-1, and the Jags are 4-1. Indianapolis is the truth. They are going to be a handful all year. They're plus 74 right now in point differential. That's 34 points better than anybody else in the conference. They're really, really good defensively, and Daniel Jones is playing great. Jacksonville, with a quality and signature win at home against Kansas City, is now 4-1 as well. And the Texans, thanks to their win over Baltimore after their bad start of one back-to-back games, so they're now 2-3. They're in some trouble, though, because both of those Colts and Jags rosters, you know, are out kicking their coverage a little bit. But I will say Jacksonville has the Seahawks coming up this weekend. That's going to be a really tough game to win after Seattle lost to Tampa. And then they play the Rams after that. So at best, they probably split those. I think there's a real good chance that the Jags are actually 4-3 after those two games. So if you're Houston, you've got an opportunity to get back into it. But the Jags, they're going to be a fun team. I think Lawrence will keep playing better. It's a new offense. His relationship with his new head coach and play caller is going to keep growing. They're very good at running the ball. We've seen Liam Cohen do this in Tampa, where he gets a run game going, and their opportunistic defense keeps making plays. That looks like a playoff team. We've got a developing situation on the other side, though, with the Chiefs. I'm not ready to stick a fork in them and tell you it's over, okay? But here is what I will say. Travis Kelce is a shell of what he used to be. Harrison Butker, who's been one of the better kickers in the league, is a problem for them right now. Every single week, he has missed a kick until last night. And last night, after they took a lead with 1:45 to play, he kicked the ball out of bounds.
I mean, looked like he was trying to land it there. So that was brutal.
Harry Butts has just not been anything like what he normally is. These are core members of this window, this era. Mahomes has not played nearly at the level until the last couple of weeks that he normally does. They can't run the ball. They got that going last night with Pacheco averaging 5 a pop, and Hunt ripped off a 33-yarder. So the two of those guys combined for like 14 carries and basically 80-some yards. It was the first time they've run it like that. So it seems like their offense is snapping out of it. They've been better. But this is the second time where their defense has had a game like this. I just don't know how good the Chiefs are. We keep thinking, they're the Chiefs. They'll get this right. How sure are we? I mean, that's what's happened in the past.
Their wins are over a beleaguered, beat-up, atrocious Ravens team right now that we need to change our how quality that win looks. It's like when you beat, not picking on anybody, when you beat Clemson week one, you go, wow, that's a big win. And then Clemson proceeds to lose to everybody. You go, maybe it wasn't that big of a win. Same right there. And then you beat the Giants, who were terrible, and bench Russell Wilson after that game.
And by the way, that game was still within striking distance. Like, the Giants were down a possession with 6 minutes to go or whatever.
It doesn't get a ton easier. Detroit this weekend. Raiders very winnable. Washington. But their schedule is arduous. Talking about Kansas City.
So they're 2-3, and they host the Lions. They could be 2-4. The best thing they have going for them, and I swear they got a horseshoe up their butt, is that the Chargers have completely fallen apart.
Yep.
L.A. was 3-0. Herbert's on his way to MVP consideration. And if you wear a Chargers uniform and you play the offensive line, you're hurt right now. Or you're bad. If you're bad, then you get to stay healthy. But if you're good, then you have to be hurt. That's kind of what's happening with the Chargers. So we have seen them up close and personal here as Commanders fans. But the last 2 weeks, they get beat by the Giants, who are bad, who just lost to the Saints, oh, by the way, a week later, and by Washington. So now they're back to 3-2. They now lose Amarion Hampton. Their running back's on injured reserve. So it's completely coming apart at the seams for the Chargers. The Broncos are coming off of a very, very good win against Philly. But whatever we thought about them coming into the year, I would say so far, they are not at that level. The Broncos won double-digit games. Bo Nix played like a Pro Bowler. In fact, I think he made the Pro Bowl as a rookie last year. And we thought that was kind of the first step toward whatever is coming. To me, they have taken a small step back. They're rounding into form. But I guess my point is, if the Chiefs were in the AFC South, you know, where you have a Colts and Jaguars teams that are upstart, any other division, basically, they'd be worse off because the Chargers seem too hurt to actually win games right now, because the Broncos have not taken advantage of this opportunity. They might be 2-4 and still a game back or something like that in a week.
My only counter to your Broncos point, I largely agree with it. They lost a couple fluky games where they lost Indianapolis by a point, where they had that one. They had the Chargers when they were playing well on the ropes, found a way to lose those games, to your point.
You didn't see, like, I watched those games and I thought, those are games good teams win. Like,
I agree.
You find ways to lose when you're not that good, and I'm kind of filing into that category. The Eagles win was impressive, so maybe it makes up for
So I've got no problem with what you're saying, but here's the counter what I'm getting to. Jets, Giants, Cowboys, their next three. So great chance, an unbelievable chance to be 6-2, right? Just based on schedule. Kansas City has a different story. Their next four games, I think at best you could hope to be 2-2, just given the way that they're playing. So the hay might be in the barn right there before you kind of get in divisional play. And they have a bye in week 12 talking about Denver. So one of the big reasons I like Denver to challenge the Chiefs this year, and pick them ahead of the Chargers, was that schedule. There's going to be, and we didn't know Cincinnati would be as atrocious as they were. I chucked that one up to maybe a 50-50 coin toss game. No Joe Burrow, they're a disaster. So, I mean, they're starting to play good football. That road win against Philadelphia, I think, was pretty special, just in terms of maybe getting their feet underneath them. But I think their best football is ahead of them. But to this point, I agree with you. They haven't been the juggernaut team that we kind of thought would go eye to eye with the Chiefs. And it turns out the Chiefs are taking a step back more.
They're 3-2 right now, Broncos.
Yeah.
And they've got the Jets, Giants. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the schedule is pretty charming coming up. This stretch here, you beat the Jets, you beat the Giants, you get to 5-2. You're in a good spot. Cowboys is a little more competitive of a game because they can move the ball and score, but you'll be favored in that at home. Let's say you win that, you get to 6-2. Then you've got the Texans and the Raiders, both very winnable. It's hard to find more than, at max two, probably one loss
right
before you would be playing the Chiefs again. So yeah, I can work that math with you. That makes a lot of sense. The schedule does get lighter. But they got to be better than they were early in the year.
No question.
They lost games they shouldn't have, and we're just chalking these all up as W's based on how good they are, which is not how it worked at the start of the season. Speaking of stretches coming up, I wanted to look at what the Commanders have in the road ahead. So you and I going into this Chargers game when they were 2-2, both said this felt like a massive game because if you win and you're 3-2, you're kind of right where you probably thought you were going to be or close to it. If you lost and you were 2-3 going into a much more complicated stretch here, when you were 12-5 last year, you were suddenly in a precarious spot to not have a shot to equal last year's record. In the next, I'm going to go 5 games, okay? Because I think that's a telling chunk for them. The Bears on Monday night, they'll be favored. They should win that game. But I do think this is going to be a tricky game, don't you?
Yeah.
Chicago has played them very well, especially in primetime, especially in Landover. Now, I understand last year in that 4 o'clock window game, Washington won, but it took a Hail Mary, and they played down to the Bears.
They did not play well in that game. They were the better team for 51 or 52 minutes, couldn't convert, couldn't take advantage, and all of a sudden, Caleb Williams worked a little bit of magic, put the Bears up late in the game.
I'm going to use the context of Jaden Daniels' first game after the rib injury, and he was not A-level Jaden Daniels, and that's probably a big reason. But he comes through in the clutch. They get the Noah Brown Hail Mary. They win the football game. But I still think this Bears game is going to be hard to win convincingly. I think you beat them, but Chicago's offense, with all the air you allow in the back end of your secondary and how many plays you give up, if they can protect Caleb Williams, feels like the Bears are going to be able to move the football and make some throws, right?
Yeah.
The Cowboys is a game in Dallas a week from this weekend that Washington should definitely win. There's no doubt. The Cowboys' defense is atrocious. The Commanders should move the ball against them. They should score a lot of points. Dallas is 2-2-1, very pedestrian. But I will say, you want to talk about bad matchups, the Cowboys' offense against the Washington defense is a bad matchup. They will spread you out. They will throw it. You've got a quarterback in Dak Prescott who puts up numbies. Again, I'm going to put it in the same category as the Bears. You're better than them. You'll probably beat them. You should beat them. You should go 2-0 in these two games. But that is not an easy game either, especially in the division, rival. So both of those games, I think, are... We always do the categories of, like, auto win, leans Washington, toss-up, you know, leans opponent. I think those are leans Washington, not auto win games. Someone might say, oh, you ought to beat the Bears. You ought to beat the Cowboys. I think those are more leans Washington games. Like a, you know, 55 to 65% chance to win, not higher than that. You with me on that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I'm going to pick them to beat the Bears. I mean, unless something weird happens this week in terms of injuries or weird setbacks. But looking at the matchup, I would say they beat the Bears more often than not. You play 10 times, you win 6 of them. Something like that. Or you win 5.5 if you want to break it down statistically. Looking at the Cowboys game 2 weeks from now, again, assuming health of all the key players, they didn't play well twice against the Cowboys last year. Now, the second game was asterisk. It was everything had clinched, and it sort of didn't matter. But even still, they had the first-team offense out there. Jaden Daniels was out there and didn't play very well before they took him out and said, that's enough, let Marcus Mariota finish it, and then they kind of came back, and it was fun. But that first Cowboys game was one of their worst performances as a team over the course of the year. That wasn't an injury one. That was a, all right, we should be good to go now, and they just weren't for whatever reason, despite the fact the Cowboys' defense it's worse this year, but it was horrendous last year, too.
Yeah. I don't care as much about last year's games with Dallas just because they're so different, the teams now. But I understand your point, and it's worth bringing up. We talk about it when we go through the schedule here. I just mentioned the Bears game. That's a different team as well, right? But yeah, you're right. They did not play great against Dallas. I just think they're division games, and they're always pretty close. And if I was to tell you the Cowboys surprised Washington, would you be stunned by that?
No, because of how prolific their offense is.
But I bring up those two games. I think they should be, will be wins because you've got to get to a decent record before, how about this stretch? Chiefs, Seahawks, Lions. That feels like 1-2. Now, if you're really good and you're a playoff team and you're the 11-win-plus team of a year ago, okay, maybe you win two of those. You win all three of those. Now we're farting through silk and we're talking about them as an unequivocal 10-plus win team and a playoff team. If they get through that stretch and they, on Monday night, beat the Chiefs, you know, on a primetime game at home on Sunday night, beat Seattle, and then at home again, they welcome the Lions in, and they have no problem handling one of the best offenses in the league with their defense. And then we're going to be talking about, wow, this is another Super Bowl caliber team. But that's your next five. Bears and Cowboys, who you'll be favored over, and then three toss-up or worse games between the Chiefs, the Seahawks, and the Lions. Here's your season that's going to tell you, I think, what this team is. If you're like me right now, you don't really know. I came into the year saying 10-7, wild card. I still think that. But how good are they? I have no idea. They look terrible against the Packers. They look terrible against the Falcons on defense. They played a quarter where they look like a four-win team against the Chargers. Got some bounces and responded. They've been incredible. They were a 12-win team against the Giants. They were a 13-win team against the Raiders. So it feels middling to me. But when I get through Bears, Cowboys, Chiefs, Seahawks, Lions, by November 10th, I will know exactly what this team is.
I offer you 3-2 right now, sight unseen. Do you take it?
1,000%.
Do you take 2-3 if one of those wins is over Dallas?
No. No, I can't.
You don't?
2-3 means I beat Dallas. That means I'm only getting one more win against Chicago, Kansas City, Seattle, Detroit. No. Because I'm banking on a Chicago win. Now you're telling me I lost all three of the other ones.
Like they did last year. They had that three-game losing streak.
Right.
Went from 7-2 to 7-5.
No, because I think you could beat any of those teams. I just watched the Chiefs play like crap on Monday Night Football. Why couldn't they do that in a few weeks when we're at Arrowhead?
They definitely could.
I think I would take 3-2, but that is also the floor. You know, I can't sign up for a losing record for five games because now, if that's the case, Danny, then you're
5-5 through 10.
5-5 through 10 with 7 to play. Still playing Philly 2 times. Playing Denver. Still having to deal with Minnesota. Who knows what they are at that time? That's a road game. So no, I'm not doing that. I think they go 3-2 in this stretch, but they need to. That's kind of my point.
Yeah, it's the old Eddie Jordan. Harvest your nuts. This is the time.
He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. This Mark Sanchez story is absolutely wild. Let's get into what happened in Indianapolis and just how crazy this is next on The Fan.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. 1. It's $15 a month. 2. Seriously, it's $15 a month. 3. No big contracts. 4. I use it. 5. My mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got tickets to see My Chemical Romance at Nats Park at 4 o'clock in 90 minutes. Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, Bills on the show at 5, and John Carlson of the Capitals on the eve of their season opener stops by the program at 6 o'clock right here on The Fan. We're taking you up to 6:30 on the Grant and Danny radio program. We're brought to you by the law firm Condorian Murad.
We love those guys. Let them help you. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Morai can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
This Mark Sanchez story is crazy. So Sanchez, of course, former first-round pick, who played quarterback for the Jets, actually in his first and second years in the NFL, got to AFC Championship games with that Rex Ryan team.
Craziest thing ever, by the way.
It was wild, because he wasn't particularly good, but they just got to the AFC title game a couple of times, including going 11-5 in his sophomore season. But he ended up being in New York for 4 years, then he bounced around Philly, Dallas. His final NFL game, people sleep, was actually here in Washington in 2018. And he has become an analyst on Fox, called a ton of Commanders games over the years, does a pretty good job in the booth for Fox. And he was in Indianapolis this weekend to call the Raiders and the Colts. Now, why he was already there on Friday, I guess you get there, you go to practice on Friday, you're there Friday night, you do some meetings into Saturday, and then you call the game on Sunday. But on Friday night, and the details are still murky here, nobody really knows exactly what happened, so we're wading through some of what we've read online. But here's kind of the timeline of what transpired. So Saturday afternoon, it comes out that Mark Sanchez got stabbed overnight in Indianapolis and is in the hospital. That was how the story was initially reported.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but here was how I responded to that. Oh, no. Mark Sanchez got robbed or jumped or something happened.
Like something horrible.
He got stabbed and he's in the hospital. When that happens, presumably, the first thought is, somebody attacked him, right? After a little while, we find out authorities are actually talking to Mark Sanchez about his involvement in a fight. That was the next thing we heard. Okay, so he's in a fight and he gets stabbed. Maybe you picked the wrong guy to fight. Well, let's see what happened here. Now, since as more information has trickled out, here's what it sounds like happened. Allegedly, Sanchez on Friday night is seen on video downtown in Indianapolis, like sprinting around. Mind you, he's in a polo shirt and jeans. He's not like dressed up to go for a run. This is also after midnight, it sounds like, Danny.
Yeah.
But he's seen
12:35 a.m.
sprinting on camera. Weird. Not like going for a run, but just sprinting around. Okay, fine. Then apparently, a 69-year-old guy who is a truck driver whose job it is to go to, it sounds like, restaurants and establishments to pick up oil that they use to fry things, I'm guessing, or to drop off oil, is working and shows up at this hotel where maybe Sanchez is staying or maybe he's just standing, I'm not even sure. And basically, somehow, some way, a fight escalates where Sanchez is allegedly mad that this guy's in a parking spot that he doesn't think he should be in and attacks him. That's the allegation, that Sanchez, 38, goes after this 69-year-old guy. And that Sanchez, 6'2", 240 pounds.
Big dude, yeah.
Beats him to a pulp. And that this guy is so badly beaten that at some point in this fracas, he decides he's got to stab Mark Sanchez to save his own life. And so Sanchez is seen on video again after whatever happened. I haven't seen any video. I don't know if one's out there of the actual fight. But Sanchez is seen like shuffling through the streets again. And his entire shirt is drenched in blood. I mean, he really got stabbed. There's pictures that have come out now of this 69-year-old man after the fact. This guy is completely pummeled. He is bloodied. He is battered. He is bruised. His face is completely knocked apart. He's got a gigantic cut in his own. I don't know what was used to cut him, but kind of like from almost his ear down to his mouth, where apparently, like, I don't want to be overly graphic, but I mean, you could basically see into his mouth if you want to. Like, it's a really scary looking beatdown that he took, and the allegation is Sanchez was the aggressor, jumps him, is mad at the guy. The guy saves his life by stabbing Mark Sanchez.
This is according to Fox 59 News in Indianapolis. According to the probable cause affidavit, Sanchez allegedly opened the driver's door of the truck and climbed inside despite being told to leave. The man told detectives Sanchez appeared intoxicated, smelled of alcohol, claimed to have spoken to the hotel manager who said the truck was not supposed to be there. When the worker tried to call his supervisor, Sanchez allegedly blocked him. Video shows the men circling the truck before a struggle broke out near a large dumpster. Detectives say Sanchez threw the victim toward the dumpster, and the two fought between the truck and the wall. The 69-year-old told police he used pepper spray to defend himself, but when Sanchez continued advancing, he thought, quote, this guy is trying to kill me, end quote, and pulled out a knife and stabbed Sanchez several times in self-defense. What?
Wow.
What?
So, again, details will still trickle out.
Precisely.
Don't know what's what, allegations, whatever else we have to say. This is insane. The first thing I thought was he has to be on some type of drugs, right? I mean, I guess alcohol would suffice, but this to me seems you're running sprints. Now you're in this fight with this guy. Why do you care where he's parking? This is not your house. This is not your driveway. There has to be more to this. My first assumption when I heard all this was he was out of his mind on something, and it led him to act this way, which is not an excuse. Guess what? You should be arrested. You should be charged. You should go to jail, whatever has to happen. By the way, he is now facing felony charges. Initially, it was some misdemeanor stuff over this fight. He's now facing a felony charge in Indianapolis for beating this guy to within a couple inches of his life. And I want to reiterate, I've said it a few times because I think it's important. Sanchez is not even 40. We're talking about almost a 70-year-old man that he's whooping up on.
Yeah, and again, Sanchez looks like a regular dude on television when he's in the booth calling games. It's a huge person. That just, again, that is a former world-class athlete. You make fun as much as you want, butt fumble and beyond, but still, 6'2", 230-some pounds, probably in better shape than most. I would say someone quite literally twice his age, that would probably suffice. A former pro athlete in that kind of state, that's terrifying.
So I get that this is speculation, and I'm admitting that. Do you agree with me that it sounds like there's some kind of him being impaired, like he's on something? Who does this?
I don't know.
This is a wild story.
This is reminder number 1 trillion and change. We should wait for all the information. People initially see Mark Sanchez stabbed. They have a narrative. They'd like to tell everybody about it. Here come the weigh-ins, this, that, and the other. And then, of course, now we have more information, and there's still more that's going to come out. Everybody be patient. Let's just wait for all the information to come out. This is very serious. It should be taken seriously. It should be treated seriously. I can't imagine someone just had a couple of sips of the adult sodas, and now it's like, you know, my next step is to enforce parking rules for this hotel.
What a weird thing.
And go inside the truck and start beating up the guy and throwing him against the dumpster, et cetera, and so on.
Well, he made fun of him for the butt fumble, and that was one word too many.
I mean,
this guy, by the way, this 69-year-old man who's involved in this, filed a lawsuit against Sanchez and Fox in Marion County on Monday. So help me with this, too. I didn't understand this. I get suing Sanchez. Why Fox? Is it because he's there on a business trip? So you're able to then sue them because they have him there as an employee, so now you can go after them too? How does that work?
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest with you. The only way that it would have made sense to me, and again, I'm speaking directly out of my tuchus on this one, is if there was incorrect reporting where this guy's character was impugned initially, where, you know, you would say, hey, you know, it's actually your employee that was in the wrong, not me, and you initially said I was the aggressor and I stabbed him or something like that. That's how it would make sense to me, which I don't know that was the case or otherwise. But yeah, I don't quite understand that. Maybe it's because he was in town on assignment for, as you said, for on behalf of Fox as a representative of them. I don't know.
Nick Sanchez, the brother of Mark Sanchez, issued a statement yesterday on behalf of the family. This has been a deeply distressing time for everyone involved. Mark and our family are incredibly grateful for the concern, love, and support we've received over the past few days, the statement read. Mark remains under medical care for the serious injuries he sustained and is focused on his recovery as the legal process continues. We would like to extend our heartfelt thanks to the first responders and medical staff, end quote. No mention of the victim of the attack or kind of what happened, but I guess in the days ahead, we're going to get more information. One thing I did hear was when the press conference happened yesterday with the guy that's bringing charges and involved in the Indianapolis Police Department side of things, he referenced that there are a lot of cameras in that area.
Yep.
And that they had a lot of surveillance. And I'm assuming inevitably that TMZ or someone will get some footage of this interaction, but that really helped them go from what everyone originally assumed was, oh man, Mark Sanchez got attacked, to pretty quickly saying, nah, bro, we got to get him out of the hospital to get over to the police station because we got to book him.
Exactly right. There's surveillance footage there, according to the stories that I've read. And also the two, which the thing I can't wait to see at some point, is they were doing the thing that everybody does now, which is recording each other. Their two cell phones pointed at each other, according to the affidavit. Yeah. So there's going to be some video of that at some point.
This was how Fox handled it when they went on the air on a show that Sanchez normally guests on in the afternoon ahead of Sunday kicks with Carissa Thompson.
All right, Friday night in Indianapolis, one of our team members, Mark Sanchez, was involved in an incident that we are still trying to wrap our heads around. And at this time, our thoughts and prayers are with Mark, his family, and all of those involved.
Not really sure what you can or should do there.
There's no good, that nothing will be adequate.
Yes, there's nothing you can do that appeases everybody. And also, they're still in information gathering mode, fact-finding mode, as a network as well, I'd imagine. But we hadn't really talked about it since it happened over the weekend, and it's just a story that is worth attention. But I would say it's going to be a while, to say the least, before you see Mark Sanchez back on an NFL call, if you do again. Next on Grant and Danny, Jacory Kroski-Merritt is leading the NFL in rushing yards per attempt. That's not the only thing he's leading the league in. We'll discuss that about Bill, who joins us today at 5, right here on The Fan in moments.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you hear chants down on the field from all the Commanders fans saying, Bill, 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 when you're out there on the field?
I definitely hear them, and I love it, and I'm so thankful that they support me, and it just made me want to give my all to them.
Yeah, you're doing that, my man. Keep up the great work. You're off to such a great start this year. Keep it going. Congratulations on the win.
Appreciate you, Tom. It's an honor to talk to you. Same.
That's a giddy Bill. Jacory Kroski-Merritt was fired up to talk to Tom Brady. I don't think he'll be quite as excited to talk to us at 5 o'clock, but he is always very entertaining, very personable, and a lot of fun. So he will join us coming up in a little over 2 hours today on The Fan. Make sure you spread the word. Bill is leading the NFL in yards per carry through 5 weeks of the football season. He is at 6.6 yards per attempt.
That's unbelievable.
Here's your NFL leaders right now in yards per carry. Kroski-Merritt at 6.6. Travis Etienne went in the last night at 6.1. Rico Dowdle, who hasn't carried the ball a ton for Carolina, but had an amazing game filling in for Chuba Hubbard this week, 5.7. Javonte Williams of Dallas is having a great year, to his credit. I'm surprised that they've been able to find something there. Denver couldn't. 5.7 a pop. And Breece Hall of the Jets. Everybody wanted to bury him and go with Braylon Allen in fantasy. Breece Hall's averaging over 5 per carry. But at 6.6, like he's in the Big 12, Jacory Kroski-Merritt, your NFL leader in rushing yards per attempt.
Two things. One, I challenge anyone to predict this league accurately. I challenge anyone to do it. Read that list again. Jacory Kroski-Merritt, Travis Etienne, who everybody wanted to move on from, whether it was Bashaul Tutin or I'm forgetting the
Tank Bigsby.
Was Tank Bigsby, thank you. Rico Dowdle, Javonte Williams, and Breece Hall is your top five. By the way, number six in yards per carry is Josh Allen, just to give an idea of what's going on with his MVP candidacy. But, you know, J.K. Dobbins, who nobody wanted, right there is your top six running backs. The second point is, it tells you, it verifies and validates what we're all seeing, right? I mean, you see the all the attributes and all the things that had so many people excited. I usually just wait a little minute before I start putting gold jackets on people, running backs especially. I've fallen for the preseason hype or the guy that's great against the third team that time, the Marcus Mason corollary. But, dude, I am ready to let my hype train leave the station. He is really good.
So yards per attempt can be telling in a sense, but I like some of the deeper numbers that are more reliant upon how you perform. So think about ERA for pitchers, and then fielding independent pitching is like, you take some of the stuff that you had nothing to do with out of the equation. What should your ERA actually be? When you look at some of the analytics on running backs this year, Bill is averaging 2.2 yards over expected per carry, which basically means when he gets the ball, what is he getting to compared to what a league average back would get with the same spacing and blocking and defenders where they're positioned? On average, he gets plus 2.2 yards on every single attempt over expected. That is the best in the NFL. So not only is he number one in yards per carry, he is number one in the very dependent on you and your skills, your vision, your power, your breaking tackle ability. And then if you look at rushing success rate, which again is basically, I would say, are you doing your job? But this is a little bit more of a, could be a blocking, could be a scheme, down and distance, situational stat, but it has a lot to do with the running back. On first and 10, you have to get X number of yards for it to be considered a win. Say it's 5 yards, right? On second and 6, same thing. You're trying to just split the distance. And so it's defined by Pro Football Reference as a success based on down and distance at X number of yards for each given down and distance. He has successful runs 60.5% of the time to help his team stay ahead of the sticks and be on schedule. The highest rate in the NFL. So you can do deeper dive numbers too. It's not just yards per attempt. This guy is rushing like the number one back with the ball in his hands in the NFL right now. And he's not getting a ton of carries, so it's not like we're talking about a 1,500-yard season or anything like that. He's also going to have to prove durable because he's already been banged up, whether it was in training camp or this season, that's missing right. A couple days of practice a couple of times. But just when the ball's in his hand, there's been nobody more effective than our 5 p.m. guest today, Bill Krosky Merritt.
And that's not hyperbolic. I mean, you've got numbers. I even actually have a higher success rate than you did. But yours would be remarkable. The one I see is 72% of success rate.
So well, it depends on what site you're looking
right,
at.
Right, on who you look at.
And they're going to define it based like a first and 10 for someone might be 5 yards and for someone else might be 6.
Totally. But the point is, it's remarkable. Whether it's 66 or 72, doesn't matter. He's been excellent. And to me, that fit is so important. Right, where you think about like it has to be like in Philadelphia right now, for example, when they're in the shotgun, they're passing. When they're under center, they're running. Everybody knows it, and people are kind of catching up and stopping some things. It was believed it's much harder to run out of this pistol. It's much harder to run out of this shotgun look that Washington lines up in so often. Well, all it took was the right running back. This is the right running back. His skill set's really good, but there's a lot of guys with great skill sets. You can go down the list of some of the stars in this league, everyone from Jonathan Taylor to James Cook or Derrick Henry or whomever. And I'm not necessarily saying I'd rather have Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt than any of those superstars. But the point is, you get a guy with a really good skill set, which he has, that's obvious. Add in the fact that he's a perfect fit in this scheme, this system, this design, taking the handoffs the way that he does from Jaden Daniels in kind of a position that not every running back can. He is thriving at this point.
We've got My Chemical Romance tickets we're giving out today at 4 ahead of the Blitz. Anthony Bevilier, the winger from the Capitals, will be on our Beltway Blitz. Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt at 5, John Carlson at 6, all on G&D today.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.